Today, we're looking at what happens when you get at least a version of what you want. And for the next story, our hero, he had some very simple demands. Snap judgment.
So this story is brought to us by a person with a very cool job.
Yeah.
Her name is Nancy Pope.
Hi there.
And she is a curator at the Smithsonian.
Actually, at the National Postal Museum. Because, you know, history, truth, you gotta kind of do that.
But back in 1984, when she first got to the Smithsonian, Nancy was given a really boring newbie task, organizing old photos in the archives.
And some of these photos I started looking, it's like it's a dog. You know, it's a dog laying down on mailbags. It's a dog sitting on mailbags. It's a dog. And I started going, what is the thing with the dang dog?
That's when one of her coworkers told her to go down to the third floor and see for herself.
And I went down and they had all the stamps and a little post office and some mailboxes and a dead stuffed dog. Oni.
Oni. That was the dog's name, the one she saw in the photographs. And now here he was, in the flesh. Kinda.
The hair was mangy, the eyes were smoky, and he did not look like, you know, a cute little dog. He just looked like some little, you know, creepy monster.
The dog had actually been in that case since 1911.
And at one point, we lifted the case up maybe an inch, and this stench came flying out. We almost dropped the case and broke it right then and there. It was the smell of almost a century of dead dog, and it was the most horrible smell that I have ever smelled in my entire life.
Okay, so not a great first impression, but here's the thing. Once upon a time,
he had been the world's most famous canine, the only dog to travel around the world, and there was widespread mourning when he died.
Nancy says that Oni's story begins in Albany, New York, way back in the winter of 1888, when a puppy belonging to one of the clerks at the local post office followed him to work one day. The puppy, Oni, was just a scruffy little mutt then, nothing special. But when the clerk left, Oni stayed.
Because the pup loved the smell of mailbags. And the dog would head straight for a pile of empty mailbags that are off in the corner and just kind of snuggle up, wiggle around him, and go to sleep for the night.
Oni loved the smell of mailbags so much that he would actually follow them onto the mail wagons that were bound for the train yard. If a bag ever fell off, he'd jump off with it and guard the bag until a postal clerk, and only a postal clerk, came by to pick it up.
Maybe he recognized the uniform. I honestly don't know.
Until one day, Oni took his love of mailbags a step further. When the wagon he was on arrived at the rail yard, he actually followed the bags onto one of the trains.
And the clerks could have just thrown him off at that point, but they didn't. So, you know, he just went to Boston.
Nancy says that back then, a train's mail car was a place of almost constant activity. You have to imagine postal employees frantically sorting an endless variety of packages, dodging kerosene lamps, trying to get everything ready for delivery before each and every stop. But in the midst of the chaos, there was a little corner where discarded mailbags lay in a pile. That's where Oni sat on this first trip, comfortable, just watching them do their work.
And when the train opened up its doors in Boston, Oni jumped out and traveled with the mailbags on the wagon to the Boston post office. Sat around there a little bit, and the next day, he went on the train and went back to Albany.
Thus was established a pattern whereby Oni became a regular on these regional rail lines. Nothing too ambitious, just day trips.
But the railway postal clerks were family. And when a clerk got to the end of his line, he would start talking about this dog.
As Oni's reputation grew among the postal employees, so did his network of available trains. It's like he had the 19th century version of a Europass, only with mail cars.
And then he started branching out through Cleveland, Philadelphia, and then Washington, D.C. He loved Brooklyn.
But of course, that was just the Northeast. He also went south.
to Mobile, Alabama, Jackson, Florida, Atlanta,
and to the Midwest.
Fort Wayne, Indiana, Wichita, Grand Rapids, and Minneapolis, Kansas City, St. Louis, Butte.
And everywhere else.
Albuquerque, Reno.
Oh, my God.
Cincinnati, Denver.
Now I'm going to stop you.
Yeah, you know, it was, you name a state, he was there.
By 1889, there were reports of Oney in California.
So we know that within a year, he's crossed the country.
This is the part where I hate to poke a hole in it, and maybe I shouldn't.
Oh, poke a hole.
How much independence does this dog have in these decisions to be branching out? Is he, like, at the train station, and he sees a train car, and he's like, that one looks good, and, like, decides all on his own?
Well, there was a lot to be said for that. Oney really did just jump on any old train he wanted and go wherever he wanted to go.
When Oney got to a town, he always followed the same routine. He would get out of the train, take the mail wagon to the post office, and then spend the night, usually at the local postmaster's house, who always made sure that there were some mailbags for Oney to sleep on.
And before long, newspapers across the country, if Oney was in town, then the publisher said, you gotta go out and do a story on the dog.
Oney proved so popular that eventually it wasn't enough that he simply come to town. People wanted to prove that he'd been there. So they started putting these customized tags on his collar. Sometimes it was an official tag with the name of the town. Other times someone would hastily scratch their name on a hotel key and loop that through his collar. Lots of people gave him these little metal coupons.
And, you know, if Oney had wanted to, he could have gotten 5 cents off for a loaf of bread at one spot, free drinks at the bar at a couple of others. He could have had a great night on the town if he was a person.
Elaborate feasts were routinely held in Oney's honor. So rich and filling were the meals that the day after one such dinner in Providence, Rhode Island, Oney took one look at a free steak and walked away.
And he just puts his nose up at it like, you know, I'm still full. I can't handle a steak.
Oney had all the benefits of fame and none of the costs. He was a dog. He didn't know he was famous. He didn't feel any of the pressure, didn't worry about all the attention. He was free to just be, at least for the first few years.
But then it gets to the point where, as Oney got more and more famous, the clerks start actually putting him on a train. Like, Oney needs to go on this train. Wouldn't that be fun?
Slowly but surely, the freewheeling hobo of everyone's imagination was no longer quite so freewheeling. Increasingly, in the very same articles that extolled Oney's freedom, you could read all about the cities where he could be found next. It was freedom scripted.
But the height of Oney being handled by clerks was obviously the trip around the world.
The trip was a marketing stunt put on by the city of Tacoma. They were trying to one-up their more famous neighbor, Seattle. So, with the consent of the post office, they sent Oney packing on a mail ship to East Asia,
where he got a passport from the Emperor of Japan,
then on to China and India,
through the Suez Canal,
and then via the Azores back to America.
He made it in 118 days.
By this point, Oney was so famous that European newspapers issued heated editorials wondering why Oney had skipped their continent entirely. It seemed like everyone wanted a piece of him.
And when he would go to each of these foreign lands, he was trotted out. And Oney, you know, who knows whether he was happy or not. But as the clerks started kind of ruling his life, people added more and more tags to his collar. Businesses love to put something on him because it's free advertising for your business, which is fine, except, you know, you think the collar around the dog's neck, you add 10 tags, one thing, you start adding 20, 30 tags, the poor dog's not going to be able to lift his head up.
Every time Oney returned to Albany, the clerks made sure to take the tags off. Eventually, they had to give him a harness to accommodate all the extra weight. But even that was rarely enough.
The Smithsonian has 347 tags. It has been said in a lot of reports that he had over 1,000, which is easy for me to believe. But I really think that Oney needed to stop riding the trains. Clerks were saying that he didn't look good. He didn't look well.
Oni was growing increasingly irritable, especially when people tried to touch the tags on his harness, either to add or remove them. He also started fighting back when clerks tried to force him onto a particular train. He was just getting stubborn and old.
So a clerk in St. Louis took him in, and I think in his time in the clerk's backyard, he started to relax and be his old dog self. And we know that Oni had enough free will that if he didn't want to stay there, he wouldn't have. But there were some clerks that just didn't want to hear that. You know, Oni, to them, Oni belonged on the train cars.
So the clerks borrowed Oni for one last joyride. They put him on a train bound for Toledo. And at first, everything was the same as it always had been. Oni followed the familiar scent of the mailbags off the train and onto the wagon. But when he arrived at the Toledo post office, one of the clerks taking him to meet a local reporter tried to touch one of his tags.
And that's what set him off. And he bites the clerk in the hand very hard twice.
The clerk reeled off in pain. And when the postmaster came in to see what was going on, Oni attacked him too.
And the postmaster calls a U.S. Marshal named Shannon. Shannon comes into the room, takes out his pistol, and shoots Oni once in the head.
Oni was killed instantly. When the news got out, obituaries around the country mourned his passing, and his body was taken to Washington, D.C., at the post office's national headquarters. And over the years, as Oni went in and out of storage, he was forgotten. By the time Nancy stumbled upon him, the world's most famous canine had become a footnote. But thanks in part to her efforts, Oni is back in the spotlight, and in 2011, he got his own stamp. He also has his very own exhibit at the Smithsonian's Postal Museum. Nancy says it's one of the most popular exhibits there.
But we have a good number of people will say in a blog or in a review or whatever, you know, it's a great museum, but it's got this disgusting stuffed dog.
Thank you so much to Nancy Pope for sharing Oni's story with us. And if you want to learn more, you can visit Oni in person and see some of those tags at the Smithsonian's National Postal Museum in Washington, D.C. We're going to have a link on our website to an interactive map of the museum put up showing all the places that we know Oni visited. It's, is what it is. Check it out at snapjudgment.org. The sound design for that story was by Leon Morimoto. It was produced by Joe Rosenberg.